Okay.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Cool. Go.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 294, which I had to look up because there has been multiple episodes without Scott or I.
Where have we been?
Yeah. And guess what? Now it's just you and I. This is another Ashless chat tonight.
Ashless chats. I'm excited. I'm excited to be back.
Yeah. So I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And we're going to kind of just hang out for an hour. We've got some news and some reviews, but I think we'll probably end up just shooting the shit for a bit.
Talking, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should say right at the top of the show that you've seen the movie, right?
By the time this comes out, I will have seen the movie.
Oh, okay. So you haven't seen it at this moment.
I have not.
It's let's see, it's December 16th.
Yes.
And it's 10 a.m. Pacific time.
Yep.
How's that? You guys like that? Mm. Yeah. So I've seen the movie.
Uh-huh.
So obviously we're not going to talk about the movie. So
no.
If you're tuning in and you're like, oh, I hope they don't spoil anything, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So just sit back and relax.
I am going to list every orc that I murdered in Shadow of War, though. So that might take a little bit, but that'll be the spoiler stuff.
What did Hillary always say? Tuck into the Nerd Appropriate podcast.
Aw. Yeah. Well, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no spoileries. Don't worry. Safe to say we're all going to see it and we'll talk about it at a later date, but.
Yep. We'll do like a we need to talk.
Yeah. You know, babies and lives and stuff and recording hours. It's not always easy to line up, guys. So
yes,
we will talk about it soon.
Right. And as you guys alluded to, because I do listen to the podcast when I'm not on it.
Yeah.
As you alluded to, you did drive me to Seattle.
I did.
And I do live here now. And I am a researcher on Xbox. So that's.
Heyo.
Heyo.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, man.
All right, so let's just get into the secrets. Tell us all about... No.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'm supposed to, at this point, say, you know, all opinions are mine alone.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
I don't represent the company that I'm working at right now. I'm just Scott at Nerd Appropriate talking about things that I like.
Yeah, you know, it's like we have all grown in position and job from when we started this thing in my living room or wherever.
Right.
Or I guess the first one was Ash's den so many years ago. But, you know, we all have jobs that we aren't representing when we're sitting here and making dumb jokes and talking about stuff we like. So we're
Correct.
Just here to talk about stuff, man. This isn't this isn't talk about our jobs hour. So
right. And for anyone that has listened to this podcast, that should come as a surprise to no one.
Yeah.
You know that.
So, I mean, to kick it off. On that drive, we stopped, I want to say, at three separate Targets, and I three separate times almost bought a Nintendo Switch while we were on the road.
Yeah,
but
that's...
You've gotten one at this point.
I've gotten one. And the funny thing about that is that, you know, because we were traveling with my dog, so we could never both go into a place together because we didn't want to leave my dog alone. So that was the one point at, like, I think you went into Target. I went into Target first. I got a coffee.
Yeah.
I came back, and then you went into Target, got a coffee,
yeah.
Came back, and you were like, I almost bought a Switch. And I was like, I did too.
I'm 99% sure if we had gone into a Target at the same time,
together.
Like had we not had the dog, we would have walked out with a Switch, like almost definitely.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So I did, you know, sort of as a present to myself for achieving this goal, I did get a Nintendo Switch.
Awesome.
And
well-deserved.
It's... Yeah, thanks, man. And it's cool. It's really fun. It's a simple device. You know, the UI is simple. Just sort of turned it on, went through some setup steps, and then I was off and playing games, which I guess is what you want to be doing. So I got, I told you this ahead of time, maybe I said it on the podcast, but as some retail therapy to deal with the stress of moving across the country, I did buy Mario Odyssey.
It was just in the car with us.
It was in the glove box the entire trip. And I ended up getting on digital, I got Mario and Rabbids, which was a game that I was really excited for.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And with the little time that I've had to play Switch, I've been playing Mario and Rabbids. It's a really great tactical, turn-based tactical game.
Yeah.
The presentation of the game is cool. You're kind of walking through 3D environments, and seamlessly you get into a battle in a field, and then the game kind of takes over and you start doing the turn-based stuff. So that's really fun. And then just, you know, the concept of merging two IPs together and telling a story around that was really fascinating too. So I would recommend it. I'm having a lot of fun with it, but just haven't had a ton of time to play.
We can just slide into some of the news we were going to talk about anyways here, but I'm willing to eat my shoe or some crow or whatever you want to call it. It came out that Nintendo has been selling basically 1 million units a month, and they've sold over 10 million Switches to this date.
That's crazy.
Insane. I remember thinking, well, there's just not enough to sell this thing. You know, I don't know that I ever thought it was like a dumb device. I just didn't get what the market was for it. And then holy crap, am I wrong? Like, Jesus.
when it came out, I don't think there was a lot to sell the device on, because it shipped with a game that, you know, if you were one of the 10 people that had a Wii U, you would have already had access to this game. And so, yeah, the launch wasn't awesome, but since then, a bunch of games have come out, first party titles. Yeah. Odyssey, obviously is bonkers. People really like Breath of the Wild, regardless of what platform it's on. And then there are some indie
Mario
titles
Kart
like
too, right on it. Or?
There's a Mario Kart 8, which I think was also on Wii U.
Was it on Wii U? Okay.
Yeah, and then Golf Story is an indie
Golf
title
Story,
that people are pretty high on. Yeah, so there's
Battle
stuff
Chef
to do.
Battle Chef Brigade, right? I've heard a lot of rumblings around.
Yeah, that's really fun stuff too. And the crazy thing about, and I think the Switch is the top selling toy of the holiday this year.
I imagine.
The thing that's crazy about it is that's with no sales. There's no deals on this Switch.
Right.
It's just people are buying the Switch at full retail price.
Yep.
And it is the top selling toy of the holiday. And that's what makes it insane.
That
right?
is crazy. It's insane, man. It's absolutely insane. 10 million units. I mean, like I said, happy to be wrong, I guess. Good for Nintendo. I like that they're like in again on the console scene. Like, I think it's good for us to have three different people. And as long as Xbox and PlayStation just want to battle it out over who can put the most processing power in their machine, it's nice to have Nintendo on the other side going like, well, we're still going to make like a fun experience. For me, it was just like, I just didn't get where this mobile category fit. Cause I was like, I was happy with my iPad and my iPhone, you know, like I was like, it just didn't fit in my brain there. But I will tell you, all of my like super Apple enthusiast coworkers, have gotten a Switch. They're, like half the office has a Switch now. They talk about it constantly. They talk about, and all they're playing is Breath of the Wild too. Like, it's, they have not switched off of it yet.
The sell for this console was a console experience that you can take with you,
yeah,
or a console experience you can have in your hand. And that's true of this device. Like, the screen experience is just as good as the mobile experience, or I mean the two are equal, I guess.
And I'll also say that, like, I've seen people playing it on the train and stuff, because, you know, for me in New York, a lot of people commute on, or most people commute on public transit, so I see people playing on, and that's where all my coworkers use it. They use it on the bus and on the train and stuff. And what I thought was sort of interesting is that its form factor does sort of work a little better than an iPad. Like, pulling out a $1,000, you know, iPad Pro 10-inch or whatever on the train isn't always the greatest feeling in the world. You kind of feel like all of a sudden you're like, hey, come mug me. Like, not that you're getting mugged all the time in New York, but it just feels like you're just like pulling out a computer and holding it in front of everybody's face. And the Switch didn't feel like that when I've seen people playing it. It looks like somebody's playing a mobile device, essentially. So I don't know. It's cool. I'm still going to get one at some point. It's just, I've been trying to meter out not having the biggest pile of stuff I'm not playing ever created. So
yeah, tell me about it.
Like, with Shadow of War and there's a bunch of other games that I haven't picked up yet that I'd like to play. I was like, I can't justify it yet. But I think, you know, I could see January or February hitting when I'm like snowed in at the house and I'm just like, screw it, and like purchase on Amazon, have it shipped to the house and start
absolutely.
Playing.
Absolutely. So, and as long as you have, you know, two or three games that you've got lined up that you're interested in playing on the Switch, you'll be perfectly happy with the experience, in my opinion. Maybe since we just did that, we should also go,
let's do the rundown.
So on this podcast, we're going to review Shadow of War.
Yeah.
I'm playing an indie game that was published by Humble Bundle called A Hat in Time. It's a 3D platformer.
Cool.
Godless is a show, right? Yep,
on Netflix.
Like, on Netflix. And then I also played a little bit of Hand of Fate 2.
Cool.
Which is the indie kind of like tabletop card game experience video game.
Yeah.
That we talked a lot about in the past with the first game and also saw it at PAX. So you may have heard about this game before, but we'll talk about the full release. And I know Ash is playing it too. So we'll probably do a little bit on this podcast and a little bit more when we're all back together again. And then we have some news. We'll catch up and we'll be back.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. So let's see. You wrote on the show notes, Scott, 3-word Star Wars review. And I don't want to spoil anything.
Sure.
So I'll just say, let's see, my 3-word Star Wars review will be...
I thought that would be the best way to get a non-spoiler review of it.
Yes. So I'm going to go with Kelly Marie Tran be my 3-word Star Wars review.
The pictures of her at the premiere are just amazing. Like, I've never seen somebody so happy to be part of a thing before in my life.
Yep.
She looks wonderful. She seems like she had a blast. When she like breaks into tears when she sees somebody cosplaying as her character, like... It just, all of that was like, oh, this is what you want in a person on a movie that everybody loves, that has like a rabid fan base around it, you know?
Yes. So, yes.
It was really cool to see that, and I'm glad to hear that sounds like what you're saying is she's good in the movie as well. So it'll be cool to see. I'm excited, man. I go Monday. I'm actually seeing it twice on Monday. So
that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I bought tickets for Melissa and I to see it in the evening, and then she ended up with something to do. And I was like, oh, crap. And she was like, well, I still want to see it with you. And I didn't want to wait forever. And I knew if I saw it without her, she would just basically never see it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take the day off and we're going to go during the afternoon. And then I'm basically just hanging. It's at Alamo, which is where we watch movies.
Nice.
And I'm basically just going to hang out at Alamo. And then that night Ryan's going to come and I'm going to stay for a second viewing of it at like 7:30. So, and also Alamo serves drinks and food. And I'm probably going to be like toasty by the second version. And we'll see how those two viewing experiences go. But
see if they're the same or different.
Yeah. Ryan's like, you're going to be...
Ryan told me he was going to review your second experience with the movie. Not the movie itself, but just you watching
it. I'd be absolutely okay with that.
Yeah.
We went and saw something together and he was toasty for it. And I think he just wants to get back at me for making fun of him for it. So.
Yeah. And with a movie like this, it's so hard because in a place, you know, like in your work environment and in my work environment, you really just can't show up to the office until you see this movie because you can't look at social media. You can't go to work.
I mean, day Friday, people were like, did you see it? And I'm like, no, I haven't. And they're like, okay. And then they would just sit there. And like, you could tell everybody. People were texting me yesterday and going, I assume you've already seen it. And I was like, I have not seen it. And they're like, oh, okay. I'm like, I will see it Monday. We will talk then.
Yeah. So that's my review.
All right. Cool.
We'll talk about it more in the future. But I love her.
There was a brief thing I was going to bring up just because I saw it last night. And then I'll mention the other thing maybe, but I've been going to a lot of plays lately. Not just Melissa did a solo show that was amazing and I went to that, but also we've just kind of been going to some more theater stuff. Some of it we've been in and some of it we haven't. Mm-hmm. But last night we went to a show that her friend had turned us on to called Say Something Bunny, and I wrote a little bit about it in Slack to Ash, but it's this sort of like pseudo interactive play, and I'm only mentioning it because right now it's like off Broadway and I have a feeling this thing is going to be gigantic. She's been selling out every show for a few months now, I think.
Okay.
Basically it's, she found this recording from the 1950s on what was called a wire at the time. You could record on literally like thread. It was filament essentially.
Interesting.
Like on a reel, it was like a reel to reel of filament before they started using tape. And so it's this old family recording that she found in an estate sale, and she started researching it and started finding out who these people were through, like, you know, like deep diving records and going into, you know, death certificates and marriage certificates and figuring out dates based off of things they would say on the recording. It's really crazy.
Okay.
And then she reenacts, she basically plays the recording for you and you kind of like read along with it on a script. So she gives you the script of what happens in the recording, and she does it as if it's a table read, like you're reading the play that she wrote.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's super, super amazing, and I would encourage everyone to look into it. And if you come to New York and it's still showing, which I think is just through January, I'd highly, highly recommend it. It's super crazy. If you love documentaries, or which you guys know I do, but if you love documentaries or even just like historical things or just finding out about people, it's such an interesting kind of like crazy thing. It's called Say Something Bunny. She's got a website up with kind of a preview of sort of what it's about. But it's really, really interesting, and I highly, highly recommend it. Out of all the things we've been going to lately, it was the one that like stood out as super unique and just a totally, and it's basically a one woman show too. She does the whole thing by herself. But yeah, it's really cool. Really, really recommended. I don't know what else to say about it other than it's just this deep dive in this random family from the 1950s. So
I think that's so fascinating, especially, you know, now that reality television is so popular, mm-hmm. you can kind of go back in time and experience a version of that. It just sounds super fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just super weird and interesting. And like when you listen to the recordings, you get these feelings for these people's lives, and listening to her talk about how she researched it and figured out who was who and how she figured this stuff out and how many variations of things she had to go through to find it. It's just really great and highly recommended. So, you know, I always like telling people to do different stuff, and this, it's been cool not just watching TV and movies all the time, but actually experiencing some things that are live, and this was just super cool. So
absolutely.
Say Something Bunny, go look it up. And if you're in a big city, I assume it might go to like LA or maybe even Seattle or Chicago or something at some point. It's definitely recommended. So
awesome.
The only other thing is I'm getting a dumb iPhone X, and I don't know why. And I don't even, who cares anymore? It's Apple's yeah. just stupid, and I'm done.
You're just like, well, this is the thing I have to get now. I heard good things about, what is that, the Google Pixel something
too.
Or other?
Yeah. Melissa has the Pixel 1, and I had it briefly. If Google would put some stupid unified messaging in their phone, I'm there. That's all they have to do. All they have to do is figure out so that when I'm on my computer, I can still text with everybody without telling them all to download WhatsApp, which is essentially what you have to do at the moment. But they can't do iMessage. Like they've yet to figure it out somehow. It's probably because they can't figure out how to make money off of it, and it's basically a loss leader for Apple. So
yeah.
But it's just the first phone that I am completely unexcited about getting. Like, there's nothing.
And that's ironic since you're supposed to be excited about it, because yeah. it's the X, the 10.
The only reason I'm not going to get the Plus again is because this is ridiculous, but it's 100% true. I realized it last night. It's ripping holes in my jeans.
Because it's so big.
It's so big. So wow. like it's sitting in my pocket and like rubbing against the front of my jean more often, I guess, or at like a worse corner or something.
Yeah, you're just moving around with something bigger in your pocket.
Yeah, I've ripped two holes in two pairs of jeans.
Wow.
In the same exact spot. And I'm like, oh, it's the phone. And I was like, why does this keep happening? And then I was talking to Melissa and I'm like, oh, this is the first time I've owned a giant phone. And this is how it works. Like, it's ripping holes in my jeans. So I'm going to go back to a smaller phone. I didn't want the iPhone 8 because that was even less exciting than my current phone. But I'm on like that yearly upgrade. And I feel like if I don't upgrade, then I could have just bought the phone. Like, there was
wasting that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm getting one. We'll talk about it later. I'll make a dumb man emoji thing and we can put it on the web because that's stupid. Everything they're rolling out is stupid. I'm just so over it. Anyways, these are the opinions of Matt Caron and of no one else, not his company or anything else.
Yeah.
But I'm
getting
that.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's get into the news.
News.
So you put this in here. I'm excited.
Yeah.
You say that Oxenfree, I think I read something about this, but the developers of Oxenfree Night School is making a new game called After Party.
Yeah, this is a really interesting concept. Essentially, it is, I think, two college friends who go out to party one night and die and then get sent to hell where they have to go on like an endless bar crawl and outdrink the devil to like escape. Which is,
I hope in some way this is inspired by Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
it's like a mixture of that and what was the Edgar Wright movie, End of the World or
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I think this is such a different kind of interesting concept. Oxenfree was really fun, so you know, I could see them pulling something like this kind of point and click, you know, adventure story off. But yeah.
Oxenfree was at Games with Gold recently, was
yeah.
it not?
Yeah, yeah, it was.
Yeah. That's super cool. That's really exciting. I'm stoked for them. I think, you know, I know it's alums from Telltale as well
so,
as,
yeah.
I don't want to say Disney too, but I'm not exactly sure.
Is it? That might be.
It's two studios. I just can't remember what the second one was, but it's something like that, if I remember correctly. So that's great. I mean, it's cool that the first game was enough of a success that they were able to make a second game. We know that that's not always possible.
Yeah.
In this current environment. So kudos to them. I can't wait to see what they do next.
Yeah. Art style looks really unique. Looks along the lines of Oxenfree, but like darker and more like satanic, I guess.
Yeah.
If you want to follow them, the game's not going to come out for a while. So you can follow them at After Party Game on Twitter and they'll be nice. Tweeting out updates and all that kind of stuff. But it looks really cool. And I just thought since we're fans of Oxenfree, we'd bring it up and chat about them for a sec.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to spin off of that, since I mentioned Games with Gold and you're talking about an adventure game, I believe that Back to the Future, the game, which is one of the OG Telltale games, yeah. is the Games with Gold right now on Xbox One.
Oh, cool.
Starting.
And it was just
as of today.
It was just Jesus, what was the giant one that I just forgot?
Prior to that,
yeah,
I don't recall.
Telltale.
I think it was Tales from the Borderlands.
Yeah, Borderlands. That's it.
Was
that's
a recent one as well.
Yep.
And then on 360, there's an arcade game called Marlowe Briggs and the Mask of Death, which I've never heard of before. So
I have not.
Have to check that out. Anyways.
So next, this is yeah. small news, right? This is tiny news.
Tiny news.
Disney just acquired 21st Century Fox for somewhere in the range of like $52 to $61 billion. Which
cool.
includes all of their debt, and I think it was a mostly stock deal, which, here's good news, makes the Murdochs the single largest stockholder in the Disney company.
Oh, no.
Yeah, think about that one for a second.
Okay.
So, supposedly, they're not controlling stock level, but they are, like, as far as single shareholders go, they outsize Steve Jobs' wife, or ex-wife, or wife, widow. Widow. Yeah,
widow.
I think that's who has
yeah.
it. On this purchase. But what it means also is that Disney now owns all of the Marvel properties that were previously owned by Fox, which is the Fantastic Four and the X-Men and all the mutants. They also own The Simpsons, which is weird.
Yep.
Think about that one for a second.
Wow. Okay.
They also inherited, I think, everything off of FX, which includes like It's Always Sunny and all of those shows. So this is weird. It's a weird thing. It's seemingly they wanted probably mostly to get the Marvel properties in, which I think is what everybody's focusing on. But they also got a bunch of, I think they take stock hold of a bunch of the Fox News Empire as well, possibly.
I think some of that may have been spun off. In
some
the deal.
Of it, yeah. So it's a weird acquisition. I know we on as fan people can be very excited about the notion of Marvel being like one big united universe, but also at the same time it is a giant deal and there's a lot going on there, and that does make Disney, I think I read something that said it makes Disney like a 40% holder over all movie properties.
Yeah, they said that, they mentioned, I read an article that talked about sort of the Big Five in Hollywood and how the era of the Big Five is over, because now there are four major movie studios and Disney is clearly the largest, if I'm not mistaken.
It's yeah, I want to say it was 40% is what they, if you broke it down into like number of, I guess, movies put out and properties owned, Disney ends up being the giant, almost half owner of Hollywood at this point. They
wow,
also, I think, took
incredible.
A bunch of radio and TV in under this too. They literally own basically a ton of sports networks now, a ton of movies. It's all underneath this Disney umbrella, which is Bob Iger's kind of like big claim to fame, I guess, is how much he's kind of acquired through the navigating through Disney. Supposedly he has he was going to retire in 2019. And now he has said he's going to stay on through 2021 to kind of guide this acquisition through, because it's not going to be immediate. And it hasn't, I don't think, been approved yet, right? Has it? It's still got to go through approval from.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how that works. I just know that it's in the works.
Yeah, so we will see. It's a giant deal. I don't know. It's crazy. It's hard to even talk about in any kind of normal scope. You know, like how do you even say anything about it that's logical? So
you don't. You just kind of wait and see what happens.
Yeah,
but it's happened.
So this last piece of news that I kind of threw in here is always sort of interesting. And also, I don't know. I'll pick a couple weird ones that we can talk about. But 2017, I think we can all agree, was a shit show, and we'll move on from that notion and just talk about the weird things we searched for. So I'm not going to talk about people because it's a sad list. I'm not going to talk about global news because it's a sad list. We can talk about, let's see, what gets some how-tos were fun. So this is the 2017 year in search that Google puts out every year. And it kind of just, they aggregate all of their searches across, you know, everything. And this is the global top list. And the number one top how-to that was searched was how to make slime.
Yeah. Okay. Why?
Why is that? I have no idea. We looked into it and there's a whole bunch of like articles out there about how to make slime. And apparently it's like a big, you know, kids activity and effects type thing that people use a lot. So people are searching how to make slime. The others are kind of logical. It's like how to make solar eclipse glasses. You know, it was a big piece of news this year. How to buy Bitcoin, which is because it's the most erratic, quote unquote, money that you can bet on right now, essentially. How to watch Mayweather versus McGregor, which you're welcome. And how to make a fidget spinner is number five, which is crazy. My brother had one of those when I was staying at his house over after I was with you going to Seattle. And I did end up playing with it mindlessly for like minutes at a time until my nephew would yell at me and steal it away from me. But
yeah,
they're weird. I feel
like making one is not worth the $4 of your time.
Go
that you
buy
could just go
$4.
Buy one. Yeah.
Did you hear that the woman, there's like the, I don't know if it's real or not, but that the woman that made it apparently never patented it. So she's
really
not, yeah. So she's making no money off of these things.
Man.
Right.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Right. Memes. You want to look at the top memes? Can we look at those real quick?
Yeah, I see them.
Do you know what Cash Me Outside is, Scott?
No, I don't. I'm not so familiar with the internet as I once was.
This is my favorite. I feel like we're going to go through memes that you haven't heard any of these. One of them. Cash Me Outside was this girl that was on Maury, I want to say. Dr. Phil. And she's like talking shit to Dr. Phil. And she's yelling about how she's like so tough. And she says the line, Cash Me Outside, how about that? And it became this just like crazy internet phenomena where she's saying, catch me out, like come fight me outside, essentially.
Yeah.
And then there were like shirts and the girl made money off of it somehow, of course. But there were like people doing YouTube remixes and all this craziness all over the place. But it's the number one search meme of 2017.
Okay.
United Airlines, Elf on a Shelf. I don't know what in tarnation is. I feel like it's probably terrible and we're not going to look into it. And then SpongeBob mocking, I believe, is all the SpongeBob faces that you put reactions on and stuff.
Yeah.
The top search movie was actually surprising to me. It was It.
Oh, okay.
I felt like, I mean, I guess that was probably one of the bigger movies this year. It just feels like that's surprising to me. Star Wars isn't even on the list.
That's really fascinating too. I wonder why. I wonder how that happens.
Timelines, maybe because it just came out. Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess this, I don't know. It still was,
maybe it's
like it
just really easy
searched
to type two letters into your browser and find something. Yeah.
Number one TV show, Stranger Things, Scott. Stranger Things.
I know. I hear you. I hear you.
That TV show, Stranger Things.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Heard that one.
Number one song, Despacito, which I somehow managed to avoid entirely. Did you hear this earworm that like got sent everywhere?
No, I've never heard it.
Don't look it up. You're a better person for not ever hearing it. It's a pop song, but
yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're on the you know, and you know this from being in the car with me for 50 hours, but we're on like the satellite radio train now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we pretty much just listen to the Beatles channel and 40s big band radio shows, which is great. So I'm enjoying that. Yeah, I've missed out on the pop music this year.
And then the last thing is the recipes. The number one searched recipe is the most boring thing. Everybody needs to up their cooking game. If this is the number one searched recipe,
it's just
chicken breast recipe. Salt and pepper, throw it in the oven. I don't know. Like, what the heck, man?
I think the key is trying to make sure that it doesn't come out dry.
Yeah.
I think that's the context for chicken breast recipe.
I guess. It just feels like, come on, you know? Let's get more exciting.
But yes. No,
let's
you're
do
right.
Some things.
If you watch any episodes of MasterChef, you know that Gordon basically just cuts a piece of meat.
Yeah.
He puts salt and pepper on it, puts it in the frying pan for 2 minutes on each side, and then puts it in the oven for 10 minutes, and then you eat it. That's pretty much how you cook all the meats.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be cooked.
All the
tasty.
Tasty. Yep.
All right. Well, let's close it up for news, right?
Yeah, that's it for news. We'll come back, talk about Shadow of War, Hat in Time, Godless, and Hannah Fink 2.
Awesome. So I have spent an inordinate amount of time killing orcs in Lord of the Rings Shadow of War, which is the new Lord of the Rings game that came out. It's the sequel to the initial one, which I am fully blanking on the title right now. I want to say War... something War. Orc Slayer 10,000.
You mean you're not like just... frantically trying to get those chicken dinners right now? That's not what you're doing?
No. So if you played the original one, it's a lot more of the same, just kind of like enlarged in scope. Basically, you are still the same ranger running around and trying to defeat Sauron and all the bad baddies from Lord of the Rings. It is a gorgeous game. They've updated all the graphics for Xbox One S and higher. I'm playing it on the S. I'm assuming on the X it probably looks even more ridiculous. Super smooth. Still got that kind of mix of Assassin's Creed and Batman combat and movement, stealth, all of that still included in the game. Still plays really well. Giant upgrade system now. So you not only upgrade your own skill tree, which each skill then has like bonus attributes you can upgrade to and add on to them. You only carry one at a time per skill. So let's say you unlock like the ability to ride a Caragor, and then you can also like unlock an extra ability on top of that, so that when you're riding a Caragor, you also can, you know, like leap off of it and do an assassination or something. Like, it's just little bonuses on top of the different abilities. So on top of that, you have weapon upgrades. So you've got a full set of weapons. As you kill like leaders, orc leaders, you gain weapons from them. And those weapons are ranked in rareness, of course. So there's like white through purple. It's in the same system that they're basically doing what I liked about the first game so much and expanding it, which is, hey, you know what else would be cool? If we take these systems from these other games and kind of put them into ours. And of course, there's a loot crate system too, but I don't really buy into that stuff, so I didn't explore that too much.
You find it's not necessary in that game?
Not that I can tell at this point, and I've been playing for about, I don't know, 20-30 hours. So each of the weapons has an upgrade system on top of them as well, and you can do special there's special different little missions inside of it, each weapon. So it'll be like, you know, assassinate 3 people who are on fire will be like a thing you can do. And if you do that, you unlock an upgrade for that weapon itself, which might upgrade a skill that you have or for the weapon.
I believe, isn't that how some things worked in the Wolfenstein games, where you had to, in order to unlock a perk of a specific, I think they're tied to achievements as well.
Yeah.
But I think that if you did something, you know, like kill 3 people at the same time with a grenade, then it kind of ranks up your grenade skill as a result of that, giving you like more capacity or something. So that's along the same lines. Yeah.
And then they also do like matching skill upgrades. And it's insane how many upgrades you can do on your character. But if you, let's say you unlock like 3 purple level, like your armor, your dagger, and your sword, and then you put those all on at the same time, and they're all like the, you know, Dorimer elite set or whatever, you'll get like set bonuses for having 3 of the same pieces on at the same time. So there's like tons of bonuses for continually unlocking weapons and adding them to your arsenal, and there's bonuses for upgrading those weapons. And then on top of that, there are coins that you can get while you're killing bad guys. Those coins or gems or whatever you can combine to make more like elite versions of those gems, and then you can apply those to your weapons, which will also upgrade your weapon in some way. So if you add your health elite gem to your armor, then you'll get like 25% more health, and you know, if you add it to your sword, then you'll, you know, get more health back when you soul suck an orc or something.
You know what that kind of winds up being, though? That just kind of ends up being just a really, it sounds complicated, but really just makes for a customizable experience, you know?
It does. You can really sort of dive in. And then once I realized like how the upgrade system on the armor worked, because originally it'd just be like, it was kind of like, we'll take the highest number game, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you realize like, oh, it's not a take the highest number game. Like figure out what set matches and works well. And, you know, your look changes along with your upgrades as well. But so you find like sets that match and you see that you get bonuses on top of bonuses and then you can add different things. You get different bonuses for adding different gems or whatever it might be. Like that ends up starting to craft like your own set of stuff. And then you don't have to carry a bow and arrow. You can also carry your hammer and throw that, which makes it a little different for your range stuff. And all of that kind of combined makes for, like you said, this super customizable kit that you run around as the ranger with. So I did what I think everyone does constantly. I stayed in the first area for way too long.
Way too long. Yep.
from what I can gather, there's three acts. I'm in the second act right now. I think I'm about three quarters of the way through the second act. But I did not realize that until I finished the first act, like 15 or 20 hours into the game.
Yeah.
And then was like, oh, I should not have. I was literally running out of things to do and I was just killing orcs. I think I wrote it to you guys. I was like, I don't know. It's getting boring. All I'm doing is murdering orcs over and over
again. That's the curse of the open world game.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere along the line, we as gamers got smart enough to realize that, you know, in those older games, there would be times in which you would leave an area and never be able to come back. And if you were a completionist,
yep,
then you would miss out. And now we're kind of mentally trained to go, oh, well, I need to make sure I do every single thing in this area before I move on. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to see it again.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's kind of a funny
pretty
thing.
Much what happened. The good news for that is when I hit the second area, I was like sailing through it because I had upgraded my guy to like a ridiculous level. So I wasn't really getting heavily challenged when I hit the second act. But the second act opens up and you start actually building your orc army. So your ability to kind of like pop heads with your elf power turns into making them run around and run with you in your army, essentially.
Nice.
Which you could do in the previous one, but it was sort of... you just kind of raised this army. I think you could do it at least. I have some issues remembering the difference between the two games sometimes because they're starting to blur together in a really bad way because they aren't different enough in story or in take. Previously, I believe you just ran around with this orc army that just kind of was there and they would die. They didn't really do much. In this one, you actually control them and command them, kind of akin to Assassin's Creed. You can send them on missions and have them do things for you while you're running around doing other things. But what's interesting and good, and I haven't played an Assassin's Creed in long enough to compare this, what's cool about it is that, let's say you get a war chief on your side and you say, hey, go kill this other orc chief. Like, go assassinate this guy. You can actually go into his mission and assist him to make sure he wins if you want to do it. So you can kind of like appear
really cool.
And run around with him and do stuff, which is pretty cool. And then you can have them like run with you to kind of protect you. You can summon them later on if you need like help while you're running around, whatever it might be. So if you're starting to like lose a battle against another orc, you can kind of like call for him to show up and he'll just like create chaos essentially and start killing a bunch of orcs.
That kind of sounds fairly unique because I don't know that you can go into your teammates, you know, your NPC teammates missions, but they can come into yours. But I think the concept of going into, you know, like a squad member's mission is something that's new. So that's really cool to hear.
It's
that.
Cool. Yeah. It gets a little run of the mill. Like they're kind of only like three or four mission types, it appears. And those three or four they're very similar. Like it's like they're getting chased or they're doing the chase or they're raiding a camp. Like it's like kind of three or four of them.
Mm-hmm. It sounds fun though. It sounds like it's all about the combat.
Yeah. The game is absolutely all about the combat. I have some issues with the combat still, which existed in the previous game and also exist in Assassin's Creed and also exist in Batman. And I'm starting to feel like it's just a control thing that either I'm terrible at or they just haven't fully smoothed out fully, which is that, you know, sometimes when you're sprinting in a direction or you're trying to battle a certain guy, it can get really chaotic in those games where you're kind of circled. There's a bunch of dudes around you. You're fighting all of them at the same time. And you start to get like a little harried and chaotic and you can't really focus down always on what you're trying to accomplish, if that makes sense. So you'll start punching one guy and it'll just kind of like auto lead you to a different guy and like slide you across the stage, which isn't necessarily what you're trying to do.
That kind of happens in Assassin's Creed too. So it's like, what are you supposed to do when you're fighting a bunch of people? Do you want the game to kind of guide you through an experience, or do you want to just kind of flail and maybe you miss a couple times? It's a weird
I think it's a weird balance. And like every once in a while where you're sprinting, this used to be a terrible mess in Assassin's Creed, but I think they've cleaned it up some. But you'll be sprinting and you'll try to like go up a wall and you'll just kind of like hit a bush and then stop. And then like you go up and hit the wall and like if you don't hit the button combo like absolutely perfect, he won't jump up the wall. And sometimes you'll lose the chase that way. You know, like every once in a while just things will go wrong and it's always in the moment when you like need it to not go wrong, you know? And then you're like, so that's still there. It's a little frustrating, but it's so buttery smooth otherwise. It's really hard to complain. It's like really nitpicking minute details of fighting and running that I don't think are like super common throughout. Otherwise the game is absolutely massive in scope. You could just sit in any one of the levels and just fight orcs and build an army all day long if you wanted. There's a whole other system of raiding camps. So there'll be like one, you started in the second level where there's like a specific castle that you're going to go raid, and you build your orc army and you get like three orc chiefs that are going to be your leaders. And then they have different types and you can upgrade that stuff. And then you go raid the castle and you basically take it over. And then you put three different orc chiefs in charge of like defending that castle. And then through sort of async online battle, you can raid other real people's castles and they can raid yours, but you're not actually there to defend it. It's whatever army you put together and kind of have set up to defend it. So it's a very weird kind of like meta async game that you can also play. And then, yeah, like if my weird frenzied review doesn't show it, there's just so much in this game. It's kind of hard to pinpoint what makes it good, which is sort of what makes it exhausting at times. A little scattered to the point where you're kind of like, is this a really great game or is it just like a bunch of good games kind of jammed into one game? And then it's kind of, now I don't know if I really, you know, like the first version of it was so focused on like running around, killing orcs, assassinating them, getting through the story. And this one's like, there's like 17 kind of collection games you can play. There's online, you know, castle raiding. There's orc army raising. There's, you know, tweaking all of your everything all over the place. You know, different upgrades for different systems. And it kind of just becomes this sprawling thing that you're trying to figure out how to get through. So,
yeah. And it's like, ultimately, if you're having fun with it, then that's all that matters. But that's really cool that you're enjoying it.
So it's a good game. I still recommend it. If you just finished an open world game, I would say play anything else and then come back to this. But it is a sprawling open world game, and it's a good setting, and it's fun. So I'm enjoying it. It's Shadow of War. You know, check it out. It's been out for a little while now, but I haven't been on the show in a little while. So there you go.
Well, if you need some alternatives, I have two recommendations today. The first game is called A Hat in Time, which is from a developer called Gears for Breakfast. The game was published by Humble Bundle, and I think they funded the game through Kickstarter. So I wanted to review this game because I play a lot of 3D platformers, and I thought, based on the visuals of the game, that it was going to be sort of chill.
Yeah.
In the sense, you know, I played a game a few months ago called Ginger Beyond the Crystal or something, and that was a very kind of like chill,
right,
family-friendly 3D platformer with a lot of your traditional elements. And the more I get into this game, the more sort of bizarre and weird the game becomes. It definitely starts in the place of a Mario, you know, 3D Mario game, or, you know, Mario Galaxy or something like that, and then just totally goes off the rails in a good way. So you play as this, she's called Hat Kid. Mm-hmm. She has basically these little magical
top hats.
What do you call them? No, well, she does use hats. That's kind of the part of the game mechanic. Okay. But the collectible she is trying to recover looks like an hourglass, like a magical hourglass. Okay. And those fuel her spaceship. Okay. Yeah. And so you visit all of these worlds and basically go through all these objectives to collect all the, you know, stars, essentially. But they're time capsules. Mm-hmm. But the thing that makes it weird is that the first level is very much like Mario 3D, except everyone, it's called Mafia Town, and all the characters are, I guess, some version of mafia people. And they kind of like talk about themselves in the third person, which is kind of weird. And you're like, okay, you know, these characters are weird, but it's, you know, still feels very familiar to Mario game because it's a big open world and you have to find all the hourglasses and you move on. I get to world two, and actually I think I may have done some of these out of order, but the second world I visited was a world in which two bird factions are have warring movie studios and they're trying to like one up each other. So you are basically participating in movie type scenes and you're infiltrating the movie studio. So there's kind of like a Murder on the Orient Express mission.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just leads to all this weird gameplay. So no longer are you in all these open worlds, but now you're doing kind of, you know, races against time. There's a level in which you need to get your photo taken with a bunch of people to build up your publicity. There's a level in which you just need to keep moving because people are chasing you. You know, you have this like string of like it's like a weird like a Mardi Gras band that's chasing you through this Mardi Gras looking environment.
Yeah.
And the game just gets sort of more bizarre beyond that. And what I realize is that it's definitely not a game geared towards like children because some of the humor is a little bit more adult themed. And it just kind of gets weird. And if I had only played the first world of this game and have sat down with you to talk about it, I probably would not have maybe spoken about the game correctly, and I may not have liked it as much. So I'm sort of glad that I stuck with it and got to some of the other worlds in the game, because the more that I see, the more that I like the game, because I feel like there's a lot of variation in the environments, the shapes of those environments, and the types of things that you do in each of those environments. So it just makes it really fascinating. Your game mechanics in this 3D platformer is that she collects hats throughout the game. The hats give her different abilities. So there's an ability to help you find the hourglasses. There's one that kind of gives you icy ground pound. There's one that makes you move quickly. And a couple of others that I can't recall off the top of my head. And then those are augmented by these badges. And so you unlock badges as well, which you can stick onto the hats. And the badges let you do kind of, if the hats are the things that let you progress through the levels, like, you know, if the levels are gated behind your ability to be able to do something,
right,
the badges are more like things that augment your, I guess, your more like day-to-day combat abilities. So there's a badge that lets you shoot like a focus beam out of your primary weapon, which is an umbrella. There's one that lets you grapple and kind of swing between objects in the environment. There's one that helps you, prevents you from taking damage from long falls. So there's kind of things like that. So there's two kind of ability modifiers that you have throughout the game, and you frequently are finding yourself switching between them based on what you're trying to do in the game. So it provides a lot of variation to how you approach some of these challenges. And then of course, because it's a platformer, you can do things like wall jump and cling to ledges. And I will also say that the actual sort of platformy aspect of this game is very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of times in which, you know, you're really just trying to jump from a cliff face to a rope. And you're like, geez, I really hope that I get the jump right so that I can hit the rope. Otherwise, I'm going to fall into the water. I'm going to have to climb all the way back up and try this again, you know. So from that perspective, it really demands a lot of your, I guess, platforming skill. There are boss battles in the game which are very challenging. Like, these bosses are doing crazy things and they take like 20 to 30 hits to kill. So you really kind of need to stay focused and stay with, you know, the movement patterns of the bosses and just trying to figure out how to defeat them and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But as challenging as the game is, the thing that I will say is that it is still fun, which I guess is the reason why I was able to stick with the game, because now I just kind of want to see what happens next, because every level is so different and there's always some kind of like weird off-kilter humor that goes along with it. You know, in the third world, you kind of sign a contract with this demon for your soul. You know, and you have to accomplish, and, you know, it's still all in the context of collecting the timepieces, but just the way that they frame a lot of these missions is really varied in a way that, you know, not every Mario game and not every platforming game is, because there's a lot of narrative that goes with it. And then all the worlds look different because of that, which I think is a good testament to their, you know, achievement in building this game, which is really awesome.
Yeah, it's got a cool art style. I dig it.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that the 3D art style took a little bit for me to, for my mind to like visually process it when I'm trying to do the platforming. The 2D art style is just hands down really fantastic. And you get to see that throughout the game on loading screens and in different places throughout your ship, which is really cool too. There are a couple of things that were low lights for me, and some of them are fixable. So one of them is the camera. The game does a lot of things where it tries to control the camera for you in a way where it like makes the game feel more cinematic, or there are probably times when the designers thought like, well, the camera probably needs to be here so that they can see what they're doing. I play a lot of platformers. My recommendation would just be to go into settings, turn off the automatic camera control and control it yourself.
Okay.
Because like I'm talking about, I would be making a jump and the camera would turn as I'm making the jump,
right?
Which changes like the direction that you're holding on the controller in the middle of your jump.
Yeah.
So that was frustrating. So I'd say turn off the camera control, control it yourself. And then all of a sudden you've got a game that is really in your hands, which is cool. The game, at least for me on Xbox One S, does suffer from some longer than desirable load times in between levels. Not really too much you could do about that, but it doesn't, you know, again, that's something that's not really a part of the game. Like the game itself is really good. Unfortunately, just the load times can get a little long at, mm-hmm. at different points in the game. And then the thing that is sort of a head scratcher for me, and I don't know if it's something that can be fixed or they would want to fix, or maybe it was as designed, is that the shadows and sort of the black levels in the game are really black. Like there are times when I literally cannot see what is happening on the screen because the shadows are so dark. Huh. And I do play a lot of games where I am streaming from my Xbox to a laptop or my computer, and I've had to like jack up the brightness on my, you know, second screen as high as I can just to barely be able to see what is happening. And sort of my general feeling about shadows in games, and this is across all games, is that I don't understand why you'd want to do that. I want to see the world that you created. I want to see the game that you created. I don't want to be lost in shadows trying to fumble through and find my way
right.
around the game. I want to see what you made, you know. So that issue has only popped up in one of the worlds, and maybe that's by design, but I really just wish it were a tad brighter so I could see what's going on. The thing that kind of goes along with that is that the loading screen in between levels, there's a loading screen that when you're going back to your hub is just a bright white screen, like 100% white with the game logo on it. So I'll have my brightness turned all the way up, and then I'm loading to a different level, and all of a sudden I get hit with like the sun. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm very aware of what you mean. Yes.
Yeah. It is just like, I go from the darkest darks to like the brightest brights, and you know, in the middle of the night when I'm trying to play, it's like my eyes are just like bleeding a little bit. But again, these are all kind of minor things. They're not really central to the game itself. So that's, you know, really good for this game. So it's, like I said, I think there's sort of an acquired taste to this game, mm-hmm. and you really just need to stick with it through, you know, at least two worlds so that you can really get a feel of what they're trying to give you in this game.
Sure.
Because what you see in the first world is very kind of like your standard 3D platforming, you know, kind of open environment, find the pieces and then get back to your ship.
Right.
But the game is called Hat in Time. It is available for Steam. I know it's on Xbox One. I don't know about PS4. It was, I think they advertised it as like the highest funded 3D platforming game on Kickstarter. I think they plan to add some free DLC in the future. So if you are a, you know, old school 3D platformer like myself, this is one that you should not miss.
Awesome.
And one that is definitely more geared towards adults than kids. So, you know, if you're kind of more on that, you know, you like more of the challenge, or if you're on that end of the spectrum, then this is for you.
Awesome.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Godless, and then I'll talk about Hand of Fate
so,
too?
Okay, cool. Godless is a new series out on Netflix, premiered, I want to say, just a couple of weeks ago. It is a Western set in the 1880s.
This is the Western. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
This came out of sort of nowhere for me and really blew me away and was absolutely fantastic. I won't ruin anything. I'll just kind of talk around what the series is about a little bit and go from there. So I had seen, living in New York, you see there's ads everywhere, and I'd seen ads on the subway for this a few times. And they were advertising it pretty well. It was good marketing. But I hadn't turned it on for whatever reason. Just hadn't really started a new episode. And I had a friend recommend it to me. And I was like, really? He's like, oh, you just give it a shot. Give it a shot. Best I could say is this is sort of like if you loved Red Dead for the setting, like watch Godless. You will absolutely fall in love with it immediately. It's perfectly themed around an American Western. And it's just got that great kind of Western feel. To it. It follows the story of this guy, Roy Good, a woman named Alice, and another guy named Bill. And Roy is on the run from this murderous guy named Frank Griffin, played by Jeff Daniels. And that's kind of how the story kicks off. And you basically see that Jeff Daniels' character, Frank Griffin and his crew, rolled into this city looking for Roy Good and then murdered literally everyone because he found out that they sheltered him for a night. It kind of just explodes from there. It goes in a couple different directions, and I don't want to ruin too much, but basically it all comes around to this one city that is only occupied by women, and it's an I'm forgetting what the thing they're mining something there, and whatever they're mining is very prevalent, but without any men. They haven't been mining in a little while, and there's this mining company trying to come in and take over, and then there's also this bad guy and his crew, Frank Griffin, kind of rolling towards it, and then Roy Good is kind of around there, and then Bill McNew is the sheriff of the town, played by Scoot McNary, which his real name is Scoot McNary, which is kind of amazing.
Wow. Okay.
But he's from Halt and Catch Fire, and he's absolutely wonderful in this show, as is Michelle Dockery and Jack O'Connell, who play Alice and Roy. Are I think they were both in... or at least one of them was in Downton Abbey. So British actors, both of them. But the cast is really, really wonderful. The setting's really, really great. If you haven't seen a good Western in a while, or you just need like a Marvel palate cleanser or something along those lines, this show feels really different and just plays out really wonderful. It's hard to really talk about without, because there's not a ton of twists or anything. It's just that it's so plot heavy that I feel like if I walk through any of the plot, it kind of is going to ruin some of the story for you. The last thing I'll say is it's written and directed by a guy named Scott Frank, who wrote Logan. And
oh, cool.
So if you liked the feel of Logan, this kind of carries through that Western feel of what Logan kind of carried. That spaghetti Western is sort of played out in this. It's only 7 episodes long. It's an hour per episode, and it's just honestly like entertaining and like easy to watch, and it's not too taxing, and the story's really great, and the acting's really wonderful, and the setting's great. Like, it just kind of came out of nowhere, and it was super enjoyable. I just don't think it's as like buzzy as a show like Stranger Things or as a Marvel show. You know, I think a Western is sort of like a weird sell, I guess, somewhat. And then also I would say, other than the fact that it's probably more than half women acted, it's not the most diverse show ever created either. It's very heavily white, but it's good. It's recommended. If it does fit into that super niche of Western that I kind of like it's not too.
Yeah. We were talking about that too, is that you don't really find a lot of just straight up Westerns on television anymore. So
yeah. And the way
untapped potential.
The way this opens is with Jeff Daniels' character rolling into a doctor in the middle of the night with his arm basically blown off, and you find out that Roy Good was the one who did it, and that he's this like expert marksman, and then it just kind of explodes from there. So
cool.
So yeah, check it out. It's on Netflix right now, all 7 episodes. It's called Godless. It came out of nowhere for me, and I ended up really, really loving it. And I think I started talking about it immediately to you guys in Slack while I was watching it, but it is super good. So go check that out, Godless on Netflix.
Sweet. So we're getting low on time, but I just wanted to quickly talk about Hand of Fate 2. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, Ash is playing Hand of Fate 2 as well.
Mm-hmm.
We will most likely talk about it more in depth on the next episode, so check out, be on the lookout for that. But Hand of Fate 2 is from Defiant Development. If you did not play the first one, the second game is very similar. The idea is that you are playing a tabletop game, a card game, against this dealer who is kind of like this shadowy mythical person. And in this game, the game mechanic is that you are an RPG character going through essentially a dungeon. And as you there's cards laid out on the table, and as you kind of step your way through each card on the table, the dealer will reveal the card to you, and sort of a different event happens at each card. And it could be visiting a shop. It could be something that leads to combat. It could be, you know, gaining more resources, or just kind of learning about the story in the game.
Because
the game has a lot of meta, which is kind of cool. And that's where the kind of the gold is here. So, but the main mechanic is you kind of step through these choose your own adventure type things. And then occasionally you will get into situations in which you go into combat. And the combat is like real, you know, 3D visual combat, not D&D type combat. And so that's what makes this game unique, is that it kind of blends this tabletop experience with a console, you know, with a video gaming experience of doing hack and slash. Some of the major improvements over the first game is that they really focused on improving the quality of the combat. In the first game, the combat just kind of felt like, I don't know, like a mini game. And in this game, in the second game, they really doubled down on doing things like counterattacks and blocking and expanding the abilities and the weapons that you can use in the game. The game, I would say the speed of the combat is deliberate in the sense where I found myself blocking too quickly, and you get punished for that in the game.
Hmm.
So it's very kind of not a button masher. It's very methodical. You really need to think about what you're doing in the combat, which makes it better and more challenging than in the first game. The other thing that is really interesting about Hand of Fate is that the dealer is constantly talking to you. And because this is the second game, he's also kind of almost speaking from the mouth of the developer, saying when you first start playing the game, he's kind of like, I thought I had mastered this game, but I've learned a lot of things in the time since the last game. And, you know, I've made some changes in places, but then all other things should feel familiar to you. And he's kind of saying this in character, but you know that you're kind of getting instructions about the game from the dealer,
yeah,
about what's different about this game. And it's all kind of done very seamlessly. So, you know, you are looking at the cards on the table a lot, but and this was true of the first game too, is that I found myself constantly listening to the dealer. He is not a dead character. He's very kind of, he's lively. He feels like he has a presence with you at the card table. And I think that is one of the other major accomplishments of this game, is that you really do feel like you are engaged with this dealer, and the two of you are kind of playing this card game together. And then you kind of bamf in and out of this combat scenario. And otherwise it just has like a very sort of D&D feel to it, where, you know, you'll flip the card over. It'll be something like, a little boy, he's a farmer, he's asking you for help. You know, what do you do? Do you like knock him down and take his money? Do you follow him and help him, you know, beat up the guys that are destroying his farm?
Yeah.
Or do you just ignore him and walk away? And it's kind of stuff like that. And then there's sort of a larger thread that runs through this game, in that some of the cards have challenge coins attached to them, which require you to achieve a certain outcome on the card. And you don't always know what the goal is of achieving that outcome. But if you're able to do that, you get the coin for that card. Those coins unlock other cards, other event cards, which is important because it kind of, some of the cards are chained together in sort of a overarching thread, a story thread. And then the cards also, you know, once you learn what the cards do, you can kind of stack the deck in your favor, because before you go into each of the missions of the game, you're able to add 5 event cards, 5 equipment cards, and 5, I think, of something else as well. Huh. Or I think this time around there's like a companion card that you can add. So you have the ability to sort of influence what happens in the game along with what the dealer's objectives are for that particular mission. Honestly, I would recommend both games are still really good. This game is, you know, an improvement over the first one, but I really enjoyed both of them.
Yeah.
The
first one is still on my list of like games that you both heavily recommended that I never ended up playing.
Yeah, I mean,
it was a Games of Gold game, right? I have it.
Oh, it was at one point, yes.
Yeah, I believe I have it in my sad digital pile of games that are like installed that I haven't even played. But yeah, it was always a super interesting concept to me. So it's cool to hear that they're incrementing.
I cannot think of anything that is like this game out there, and that's what makes it interesting. And you know, we're fans of tabletop games. We play video games. I'm sure a lot of our listeners do both.
Yeah,
this is a game that allows you to do both, and allows you to sort of flex both of those muscles. You can be, you know, good at, you know, story planning and D&D and resource management. You can be good at, you know, live, you know, third person combat and. Uh-huh. It just, you mash those things together, and that's Hand of Fate, and it's super cool. I'll let Ash talk about it next week, but again, that's a recommend for me as well, Hand of Fate 2.
Awesome.
From Defiant Development, I believe it's available on all platforms now.
Awesome. Hey, dude, yep. We did it.
Hey, we did a podcast. Yeah. I'm back. I'm excited to be back. You're back. This is great.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can all do this together sometime in the near future. We're closing in on 300. We always say that we're amazed that we're able to do it, but we're able to do it, so... that's super cool, and we'll just keep this train rolling as long as we can.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I got a dog too. I didn't even say that.
Oh, that's right. Well, we're gonna have to save it for next
week.
We'll
welcome Benny to the family next week.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your dog. Let's see. You can reach out to us on Twitter, you know, all social media, Nerd Appropriate. Let's see, you can write us at nerds@nerdappropriate.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do Instagram at conventions. We're more engaging on Twitter most of the time.
Yeah.
Facebook, you can get us as well, but we don't do a ton of that. But Twitter is your best bet to engage with us. And then otherwise, what's our next thing? Is that going to be like a PAX coming up? Probably PAX East.
PAX coming up. We're also, I think, going to try and squeeze out a small episode of me and my wife, Melissa, and Ash's wife, Christina, because we went to PAX Unplugged, and I think we still want to talk about it a little bit and the games we played there. So
perfect.
We'll do that at some point, but I think the next one up is probably PAX East, I believe, and then Comic-Con, cool. And then we're back in the swing of crazy convention season.
Sounds stuff. Good. All right. Have a good week, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, we're back. Ashless chats. Let's do this.
Ashless chats.